Welcome to CoCurious, which is a community of learning professionals who are reimagining learning and financial sustainability. My name is David McLean, and I founded Learning Advisory to help academic and corporate education providers better balance learning excellence and their sustained financial performance. Our mission is simple: ensure that every cent spent on learning maximizes both the educational experience and an organization's bottom line. CoCurious provides an insight into this challenge and how we at Learning Advisory provide the support to address it. So it's one thing to have thousands of Facebook friends or thousands of followers on Instagram or LinkedIn and have the largely staccato interactions of a digital medium, either consuming and or producing. And it's another thing entirely to be interacting with a lot of people across the world. And this is what John Sarnai does. In 2024 alone, this guy has delivered more than 80 talks in more than 60 cities. So if you do a quick calculation on that, you're talking about some pretty serious depth and breadth of engagement with the human condition. And that's why I've asked John to join us to share particularly the two things that he has experienced in about 80% of the people he's worked with in this year alone. The two things that most of the world are holding to be true and as a result are grappling with in their mindset and, of course, their related practice. John, what are those two things?
Well, David, before I tell you the two things, I've got to give it a bit of context. The audiences around the world have different tonalities, and because of my access to them, I get these tonalities. And I must firstly say that in the UAE and in Saudi, there seems to be a very optimistic viewpoint of the world. And I wrote a chapter in one of my books called The Breathing of Empires. And it was really focused on certain empires breathing in and certain empires breathing out. And the Western world is breathing out. And the East or the Middle East is breathing in. And so there's a bravado and optimism in the Middle East. And when I say Middle East, certain countries in the Middle East, many countries in the Middle East are in trouble still. But then we get the Western world, which is really the old superpower, that is stuck in these sort of two messages that I keep feeling as I'm exploring the world. The first one is, why is the world against us? Why is everything working against us? Why is everything so tough? Why is everything not as easy as it used to be? And this is very much indicative of the fact that the Western world had it easy for so long. Things were easy, man. In Europe, things were easy. The world was built for Europe. The world was built for America. The currencies around the world were the main currencies of those two places. And so everything was easy for them. And now that they have stagnated in many different ways and have not evolved in innovative ways, are victims of a world that's moved past them. And it's very difficult when you've already been privileged and your privileges get taken away, because now you're like a spoiled child who doesn't have its toys anymore. And now the world at large is to blame for you not having it the way you used to have it. And that's the first sort of tonality. The second tonality is, who's coming to save us and why are they taking so long? And again, that is a victim mindset, a powerlessness that you feel. And again, these are very Western tonalities. You know, I don't get these exact tonalities in Saudi. I've just gotten off a call with Saudi and it is just go, 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 go. Everybody move to the future. And it's almost as if, because UAE and Saudi don't really have a very successful financial past, they only have a future that they're focusing in on, whereas the rest of the Western world have had a future, have a past that has been exceptionally successful and is starting to wane. And so we have a very privileged class that is falling victim of their own privilege. And a very difficult thing to tell them, because even the post I made on LinkedIn about this topic got quite a lot of harsh remarks from people who are stuck in the drama triangle, which don't want to see out of the drama triangle. And that's really, I guess, why you asked me to be on the pod.
The victim that we all have in us to some degree, we all stuck in our program, stuck in our story to some degree, and awaiting being saved from our selves, from our existential continuum. Yes, those are the symptoms. So what is the source of this? And I noticed when you spoke of the West, you said breathing out instead of exhale. And because words matter, is exhaling has a sort of relief about it, breathing out in the way you've articulated it as a different connotation.
Exactly the opposite of relief. Yeah.
It's breathing out clearly with the hope of breathing back in again to keep the cycle of life going. Anyway, I digress. What do you believe is the source of the symptoms of a victim script?
It's a level of entitlement that has been birthed by generations of luxury, of a lot of surplus. And there's a great line around weak men make bad times make strong men make good times make weak men make bad times. It's a cycle, right? And I think it was the Sheikh of Dubai who actually changed that and said, my grandfather rode a camel, I'll ride a Mercedes, my kid will ride a Rolls Royce, his kid will ride a camel. And he's wise to the fact of the cyclical nature that we go through as human beings. And so one of them is this entitlement, and really at nobody's fault. You know, you grow up in a world where everything is available to you. What do you do? It's very difficult not to be entitled, because really it's your only expectation. I often think of very beautiful people that are just beautiful all the time. And imagine how the world, not imagine, you're a good looking guy, but imagine how the world reacts to a very good looking person. It's a very different experience of life, right? There's an entitlement that happens to very good looking people. And when that kind of wanes, I'm sure there must be a depression, a throwing your toys out the cot scenario that happens for you, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is the educational system that we've had in the West for the last 200 years has really prioritized a focus on algorithmic intelligence, focused on outcome-based thinking. And this has really been important in a world of economies of scale and efficiency and profitability at all costs. The stability of our thinking, the stability of our organizational structures, even the stability of some of our religious structures. And if you think about it, a lot of religions, you're praying because you hope you're not going to hell. And you're studying, hoping that you're not jobless so you can get a job. And you're marrying, you're hoping not to be lonely. It's weird because we go through these behaviors hoping to seek some level of solace on the other side, but the intentionality behind them is one of fear. It's not actually one of optimism. And it's an underlying scenario which we don't often even know we're suffering from. And so through my research, what I've started to realize is that actually what it is an addiction to a brainwave called a high beta brainwave. And what has happened to us as a society at large, we are so addicted to a high beta brainwave. And it's such an uncomfortable place to be. Even though it's so uncomfortable, we become addicted to it. And if you think about Middle Eastern mothers, Jewish mothers, Indian mothers, Italian mothers, they all mother from a place of anxiousness where they must be worried about their children. And if they're not worried about their children, they're not good mothers. And it's such a ridiculous notion if you really start to think about it. And even the mothers themselves will agree with me that is a ridiculous notion, but will go exactly back to worrying about their kids. And so what has happened to our society at large? There's an addiction to certainty, which creates a brainwave called a high beta brainwave, which doesn't allow you to emotionally regulate yourself. And when you don't emotionally regulate yourself, you become a victim of circumstances that are changing at a pace, especially if you've been entitled. Now you've got entitlement and an addiction to a high beta brainwave. And society at large is richer than it's ever been, more efficient than it's ever been, in a better place than it's ever been, but also on more Prozac than it's ever been, drinking more wine than it's ever done, and also more lonely and anxious than ever before. And so you've got to say there's a dichotomy that's going on in our society. And the dichotomy all comes down to neuroscience, the addiction to brainwaves and the inability to emotionally regulate ourselves.
I'd never ever thought about it like that, where the continual striving to expand, to better one's opportunities with high degrees of hope and fairly low degrees of trust. While hope is not a strategy, a life without hope is not a life worth living.
Oof, beautiful.
What you've reminded us of is that so much of our striving is through attachment and equally fear of detachment from what I currently have or unobtained attachment that I seek.
Yes, nice. I like that. Can I just rephrase that a little bit? And I used this in one of my books, and it was, are you running away from the darkness or are you running towards the light? And society at large is running away. Nobody's running towards. You're just running. And you don't even know why you're running. And if you think about people in traffic, look at people in traffic, in a hurry, hurry, hurry. To what? Just in a hurry. Don't know why I'm in a hurry. I'm just in a hurry. I'm always impatient. And this is all based on that sort of fear.
Something else that I learned from you was our outcome addiction. And I had a fascinating conversation with somebody this morning about post-growth sustainability. The context is what society and all of its components is available to us beyond capitalism. We're so tethered to growth, growth for growth's sake often. So when I ask people, they say we're going for growth, normally in an organizational context. And I'll ask them, define growth in your unique context. And almost invariably, they have to really think about what it is, and because it's generally growth for growth's sake. Mm. So in the context of our obsession with growth, individually and as organizations, societies, tell us more about outcome addiction and how we can more intelligently navigate it.
I wrote a chapter called The Horny Teenage Boy Syndrome. And really what it was explaining how Wall Street has created a tonality of a teenage boy that is very young and immature and requires growth at all costs, even at his own costs, even at his own health. He's willing to give up his own joy for growth's sake. And it's an immaturity that has been somehow created as a standard in our society. And we realize that we are not robots. We are gardens. As human beings, we have been for the last 200 years treated as robots. And because of this robot characteristic, we arrive at quote unquote success and find it empty and find it lonely because we've been duped into the idea of success. And I read something beautiful the other day. It said, the world at large is fatigued, not because they're tired, because the system has let them down. They have done everything the system told them to do, but there is no joy at the end of the tunnel. There's only more. And so this addiction that has set into our society, if you ask people why they act like this, they can't even tell you why. It's just somehow that this is what's been done for us and this is how we must act. But if I again have to drill down the ability for us to emotionally regulate ourselves, when you are in an alpha brain state, there is no need for more. You're quite content. Quite relaxed, you're quite adaptable. And also realize that an addiction to certainty and this addiction to outcome is not adaptability. It is exactly the opposite of adaptability. Adaptability requires patience. It requires you to sit back and to look and see and learn, whereas an addiction to certainty is action orientated over everything else and then fix it as you're going along. And I think that it kind of worked in the Industrial Revolution, because in a stable market, in a stable world, it's not a bad thing because yes, it's speed. Whereas today it's direction. And direction is another way of saying adaptability. And if you think about our brains, neuroscience has got a great stat recently come out, and Dr. Joe speaks about it a lot, my meditation teacher. And he says, By the time we are 35 years old, neuroscience is proving to us that we have between 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day, of which 90% are the same thoughts as yesterday. Which means that our brains have been trained for familiarity, not adaptability. And because we're addicted to familiarity, we're addicted to outcomes. And so it's this brain wave addiction. And if you think about how your personality is actually created, it's created because of highways of thought that of neurons that have wired and fired together so many different times that these highways of thought are your familiarity machine that keep bringing you back to familiarity, keep bringing you back to familiarity, which means it's so difficult for you to want to become adaptable that you have to really work at creating a muscle in your brain that is not about outcome, but about adaptability. And what this will do once you get it right is elevate your consciousness and elevate your awareness. And as you start to elevate it, you start to see opportunities ahead of you that you otherwise would not have seen. And it's best described by Einstein's quote, who says, you cannot solve a problem from the same awareness that created it. And where we are in the world today is an awareness that created the situation we're in now. And we're trying to fix the problem from the same level of awareness, which is impossible. It's literally impossible, literally, because your frequency of vision is stuck at whatever, 98.1 FM. Now you're trying to go to 2000 and you can't see it. Like, it's impossible for you to see it. So what we have to do and realize what we have to do, and really it's a quote from Einstein who said, the medicine of the future is the medicine of frequency. And what he was describing was how quantum science works, not how Newtonian science works. And what quantum science says to us is that every part of you, the way you think, act, and feel creates a level of frequency. And your diseases, money issues, lack of relationships, or whatever the case may be in your personality are linked to your frequency. But when you are able to change your frequency, in other ways, are you able to change the way you think, act, and feel? Another way of saying, are you able to be adaptable? And when you become adaptable, your frequency changes. And once your frequency changes, your diseases fall away, your opportunities change, your relationship statuses change, and everything changes based on frequency. And so the problem we're having in the world today is that leaders around the world are still working within the Newtonian science principles of push harder, keep going, more strategy, push more people at it. And when really in truth, it's not about that. It's about a realignment of your level of awareness to see opportunities ahead of you. And the last piece on this, have you seen the share price of Zara over the last 3 years? Zara has gone from $19 billion to $11 billion. And you got to ask yourself, are Zara stupid? No. Are they lazy? No. Do they have McKinsey's and Accenture and everybody else up there helping them? Of course. They couldn't see Shein. Why? Totally different set of principles. Totally different business model. And so they just didn't have the awareness for it. And so the answer comes down to our addiction to certainty and outcomes is based on an addiction to a brain state called the high beta brainwave, which keeps us stuck in solving yesterday's problems, not even seeing tomorrow's solutions.
Our mission at Learning Advisory is to help academic and corporate learning providers balance learning excellence and sustain financial performance. So if this conversation resonated with you, check out the other episodes on CoCurious. Visit us online at learningadvisory.com and let's keep learning. Let's keep sharing. And let's keep holding each other to account for the advancement of ourselves and practicing what we teach.